You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition with me, Justine Moss, this Sunday morning. A very good morning to you. Crossing now, as usual, to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks for joining us here once again. Let's start off with Ebrahim Raisi, of course, the ultra-conservative judiciary chief, under U.S. sanctions for human rights abuses, but he has won a presidential election. I guess no real surprises there, but experts are saying his election was unlikely to affect that course of indirect negotiations with the U.S. when we're talking about reviving that 2015 nuclear deal.
Yeah, it's very interesting because on the face of it, you hear this news that an ultra-conservative cleric has won 62% of the vote in the race for Iran's presidential election. And you think, well, that must absolutely, completely doom any prospect of reviving the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, from which, of course, former President Donald Trump withdrew the United States. But there appears to be a theory here in Washington that there is now a narrow window for making very rapid progress in those negotiations, because with Ebrahim Raisi's election, a clock has started ticking. He will be inaugurated at the beginning of August. He's going to have, as president, massive influence. But of course, remember that the ultimate decision maker in Iran is the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, a clerical figure who is the head of state in Iran and the dominant voice in government. So American negotiators are said to believe that there is now basically a 6-week window to try and get the Iran nuclear deal revived and done before President Raisi takes office, after which time the assumption is that because of his own particularly hardline stance towards the United States, it would become very difficult to revive the Iran nuclear deal. And the New York Times, in its Sunday edition, citing officials within the Biden administration, is reporting that those officials believe that a lot of this has been choreographed by the supreme leader. I mean, it's been widely reported and suggested that this presidential race in Iran was essentially rigged in Ebrahim Raisi's favor, that the supreme leader wants to have a hardline conservative cleric in place in the presidency to deal with a whole raft of domestic issues and to project toughness and a spirit of patriotic nationalism to the Iranian audience at home. But these Washington officials, these Biden administration officials, seem to believe that the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei also wants to get the Iran nuclear deal revived between now and the swearing in of President Raisi. And indeed, in Geneva, where these Vienna, rather, where these talks have been taking place for several weeks, indirect talks between the Americans and the Iranians, the New York Times is reporting that the text for a revived agreement already exists, has essentially already been agreed, and everything has been placed on pause while Iran gets through this presidential election. So let's see what happens in the course of the next month and a half. I think it's definitely going to be something you and I are talking about over the next several weekends, because there's going to be a test here for that viewpoint that there is this narrow window of opportunity to get this done, because it would seem that after early August, if it isn't done by then, it is going to become substantially harder to try and get that nuclear agreement back on the books.
It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Simon, we did speak about this yesterday, Juneteenth. The US has marked it for the first time as a federal holiday. But, you know, in-person marches, we saw music, we saw a lot of reflection as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw first thing this morning a presidential statement from Joe Biden on Twitter in which he wrote that Juneteenth marks both the long, hard night of slavery and subjugation and the promise of that brighter morning to come. Remember, this is a holiday that commemorates the end of slavery in the United States. Now, for the first time, a national federal holiday. The president wrote, "It's a day of profound weight and power. Today and every every day we must work to ensure our nation finally lives up to its promise of equality for all. He is absolutely delighted to have been the president who signed this holiday into law just a couple of days ago. We were talking on the program yesterday about the work that activists had done over the last several years in order to bring this about. And the prime activist in all of this is now 94 years of age, Opal Lee. She was at the White House when President Biden signed this into law on Thursday. Back on June the 19th in 1939, and by that point, Juneteenth was already widely observed by Black Americans all over the country as an unofficial sort of de facto commemoration of the end of slavery. Her family's home in Texas was burnt to the ground by white supremacists. And from that point on, she was absolutely determined to try and secure nationwide recognition of June the 19th as a national day of commemoration. And so decades and decades later, she finally got that done with the votes that took place in the House of Representatives and the Senate just a few days ago. Joe Biden then immediately seizing on the opportunity to sign that legislation into law in time for today here in the United States, Saturday, June the 19th. There is already a bit of a debate underway about whether there is a risk that Juneteenth becomes another big commercial holiday, like, for example, President's Day here in the United States, or a variety of other days that retailers seize upon to offer various discounts in a bid to get people into the shops and the stores, with Juneteenth activists and supporters who had waged this battle to get it recognized as a holiday saying, look, we didn't really do it for that purpose. We did it because this should be a national day of reflection about slavery and the impacts of slavery on the American psyche. But I think it is inevitable that since it is now America's 12th national holiday every year, 12th federal holiday, I think it's probably inevitable that it is going to have some commercial connotations going forward. But those people who are behind this move are determined that it should serve as a day where there are teachable moments for Americans as they learn about the civil rights history and the civil rights struggles that took place in this country.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, and I'm speaking with Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, California declaring a state of emergency, parts of the state reporting dangerously high temperatures. Looks an absolute scorcher there at the moment. Arizona also very, very hot.
Yeah, California, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, a whole band of states out in the west of the United States now experiencing what the National Weather Service says may be just the beginning of a very long heat wave this summer. All of those states recording triple digit temperatures here, more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That's nearly 38 degrees Celsius. And people who live in those states are being warned to expect that for a considerable chunk of time going forward, certainly the whole of next week and quite possibly for much longer than that. And that means potential difficulty in a variety of different ways. It puts obviously huge pressure on water sources, for example. Remember that in large parts of the western United States, water has to be pumped in from other states, particularly in times of intense heat. But it also creates the risk of an early fire season this year. Those wildfires that we've talked about on so many occasions in the past, a real possibility that the fire season is going to begin early this year. And we're seeing, particularly in elevated areas, people beginning to make preparations preparations, substantial preparations. Again, in the New York Times, there's an article about one landowner in California who says, look, I'm not waiting for the fire service to come and put a fire out. I'm actively trying to clear as much brush and undergrowth off my property as possible and create kind of fire lanes so that if there is a fire, it won't jump from one part of his property to the next. And of course, all of this it plays into the focus that the Biden administration has placed on climate change in every aspect of government policy. I mean, I think that one of the biggest changes that we have witnessed here since January the 20th, when Joe Biden was sworn in, is that climate change not only is playing a central issue atop the president's agenda, but it is being addressed by every single government department. It is notable that every time you hear various cabinet secretaries speak about initiatives, they always focus and mention, they focus on and mention the climate change impacts of any decisions that they are announcing. It genuinely appears to be, as the president puts it, a whole of government approach. And I think there's no question that as we see these temperatures continue to rise and this hot weather just continue to sit over cities like Los Angeles, like Phoenix, like Salt Lake City, and so many others, the White House is going to seize on that as a fresh opportunity to say this is exactly why it's vital for the US now to confront the climate change issues that the country faces head on.
And Simon, the White House a little emptier this weekend, unfortunately. President Joe Biden's dog Champ has died at the age of 13, a very good looking dog.
Yes, very sad news. Their German Shepherd, Champ, who moved into the White House from their home in Delaware back on January the 20th, passed away at home in Delaware. And that gave rise to a statement that the White House put out from both the president and the first lady, saying our hearts are heavy today as we let you all know that our beloved German Shepherd Champ passed away peacefully at home. They describe him as our constant, cherished companion during the last 13 years, and he was adored by the entire Biden family. They make it clear that this was not unexpected. They said that his strength had been waning over the course of the last few months and reminded people that he used to enjoy chasing golf balls on the front lawn of the Naval Observatory here in Washington, which, of course, is the vice president's official residence. That would have been when Joe Biden was serving alongside Barack Obama as vice president of the United States. So Champ, no stranger to the corridors of power here in Washington, D.C. The Bidens have another dog, Major, much younger, who has been a bit of a handful over the last few weeks. He's engaged in various biting incidents at the White House and at one point had to be sent home to Delaware for a little bit of a cooling off period. But for Major now, the White House lawn he will have entirely to himself, although we are told that the Bidens are planning to get a cat for the White House. The White House press secretary is asked on a regular basis if she's got any updates on the cat. There is definitely going to be a cat. We just don't know when it's going to arrive.
That's marvellous news. I'm a big cat lover, so I can't wait to see what sort of cat they get. And knowing the Bidens, it could very well be a rescue as well. Simon, thank you so much, as always, for talking to us here in Singapore, keeping us updated.
Thanks, Justine. I'll talk to you next weekend.
Speaking there with our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks.